Welcome again to the Digital Orthopedist Podcast and our audio series from the 9th Annual DocSF Experience. My name is Dr. Stefano Bini, and I am the host of this podcast and the founder and chair of the DocSF conferences. In this session, moderated by myself and Dr. Charlie DeCook, he's a highly respected, high-volume private practice surgeon, we heard from three startups we love and asked Charlie to ask them the tough questions someone in private practice would ask them. We started with Richard Bolander, CEO of TrackPatch. He talked about a wearable device for monitoring post-surgical recovery. The presentation highlighted the transition from traditional practice to value-based care and the integration of these technologies into clinical settings. Second, we heard from David Head, CEO of Commure, about their AI-driven ambient documentation solutions. And third, from Brian Lord from Pristine Surgical, about their single-use endoscopy devices, which are aimed at simplifying operations in ambulatory surgery centers. I'd like to bring Charlie DeCook up to stage with me for the next session, Startups We Love. Now, Charlie is a remarkable human being. He's actually probably one of the most well-known orthopedic surgeons in the world these days. He published an article called 12 by 12, Obtaining True OR Efficiency with Radical Time Transparency that I think every orthopedic arthroplasty surgeon has read. And you are a high-volume, high-quality surgeon at the same time, which is, you said those two things do not need to go, they often go hand in hand. So thank you for being with us today.
Excited to be here. This has been a great conference, hasn't it? This is actually my second time here, but I've learned a ton. This is inspiring. So I've had the opportunity to have six startups in my career, and we've sold off six companies so far. So I'm excited to talk to these startups and really get an idea of where they are on the stage of their progress.
Excellent. Let's bring the first one up. So Richard Bolander, president of a company called TrackPatch. Richard's a technology leader developing strategies designed to monitor patients in a rehab and orthopedic spaces. He's a scientist, visionary. In fact, I can corroborate. He's now president of the company. He's going to tell us a little bit about their trajectory and what they're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. So just some background. I've always wanted to be able to use technology to help people. And in order to do that, I earned a PhD in biomedical engineering with a focus on impact biomechanics. So I was trying to understand, what does it take to prevent an injury to occur? And so I initially focused on for my dissertation to understanding the mechanisms of brain injury when you're exposed to an improvised explosive device. When I graduated, I then transitioned into becoming a concussion researcher. And because I was really focused on trying to understand the mechanisms of concussion, how to prevent it, and reduce the chances of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So during that time, I also became a product developer in the areas of wearable technology. So developing algorithms, basically end-to-end development, and created a helmet system, the sensors that go inside a football helmet to measure how hard, how often, and where data and make it meaningful and turned it into an analytics platform that's used by football coaches. I then transitioned into orthopedics in the last 3 years. And what I've actually noticed is what we were doing with wearables in football is actually further ahead than what I've been seeing in orthopedics. So as a general outsider to the healthcare, there's three big trends to value-based care from traditional fee-for-service measures fee-for-service. And then beyond that, the conflicting philosophies behind that. Secondarily was the challenging environment that healthcare is in. Everyone's aware of all the different challenges that we see right now, everything from high costs to low resources and everything in between. And the third is the lack of how we evaluate technologies. There's so much leaning in the state of the art right now is patient-reported outcomes or really gross measures such as rate of readmission. So you would think that wearables would fit in really well here, but there's a lot of pushback that happens for clinical adoption. There's the perceived cost and complexity with adopting it. There's demonstrating that the data you're collecting is meaningful and incentives for a general clinic to want to adopt these. So looking at that, we then chose to try to find a way to focus on a narrow area. And so particularly we wanted to look at the post-surgical window where particularly for TKA, but we know that the surgery is a cost generator, but the post-surgical care is a cost sink. So where can we save costs there? So at a high level, the system consists of two IMUs that are attached to the skin. One is below the knee, one is above the knee. It's in a plastic tray that attaches to the skin. The devices are worn for about 14 hours a day. They're charged overnight and put back on. Generally, the patients wear them for about 2 weeks before surgery and then up to 6 to 8 weeks post. That's near continuous streaming of data that's stored on the devices that's then communicated to the phone to the cloud. The patient application also allows the patient to do in real-time guided exercises and submit their subjective data as well as have telemedicine interactions. All that data is up in the cloud, and clinical teams, as well as myself, can look at the data and make inferences and manage the patients accordingly. Here's an example of a live patient. Typically, the patient was about 120 degrees flexed, about a 30 degree change in their flexion, and it took a period of time to get back. They haven't reached it yet, but they're going by an updated graph they did. Additionally, what we see with step counts, immediately after surgery, there's a significant drop, and then it takes a period of time to get back. The reason why you're seeing so high data in the pre-surgical area is the patient was using a bike. And so we were capturing all those repetitions as well. We also capture pain and we look at compliance over time as well. So some things to note, we're a class one medical device. We've been used at with a large number of institutions, with surgeons, over 1,000 patients. And it's important to note that the device is also agnostic, which allows us to work in a clinical practice. And so we're not tied into any one specific implant manufacturer or company. Additionally, as you can see on the screen, I'm also now an orthopedics researcher. And the purpose of this is I wanted to look at creating a standard for how we evaluate what's normal or atypical in patients. And so particularly with the main paper, we looked at 600 patients and defined what is the expected daily recovery and distribution of that for surgery. And we looked at things, flexion, extension, steps, cadence, and other factors. For once again, once I have a standard, then I can identify who's performing normally and who's not. So why is that relevant? So when we look at different ways or business models for the company, the first one that we're really focusing on right now is, as I mentioned before, the transition to value-based care. And in this case, for some context, what's happening is that large organizations will get a certain chunk of money for surgery and post-surgery management. And what we're saying is by using the recipe that we have with our wearable technologies, we support your team in order to cause significant cost savings by resourcing and addressing the patients that need addressing and leaving the other ones be. The second is where we focus very heavily or have transitioned to the sports medicine area as well. And what's been interesting is the recovery data for ACL versus TKA is very different in terms of how the patients move, the rate that they recover, and the population is completely different, much younger, different motivations. So trying to address that group has its own challenges, but on the other side, they also are more technology. So it's been an interesting shift. Thirdly, and this is more, I think, most important for this group, is being used as a clinical evaluation tool. Because if you're a robot manufacturer or drug manufacturer, how much do you really want to rely on your outcomes for things such as, or lean on outcomes such as patient-reported outcomes, or these gross metrics such as rate of readmission? It's particularly, like, for example, I've seen a bunch of patients where their COOS at 6 months or 1 year or 3 months may not show any change relative to surgery, but we see a big difference of either their pain is less or they're performing better compared to when they went in. And so ultimately the question is which one do you want to lean on or how do you work with them together? So in conclusion, the general spaces we own is going to be a very smart use at more of an organizational level of how do you resource patients, identify who's at risk, address those, leave the other ones alone for cost savings initiatives. The second is essentially becoming the standard of how you evaluate outcomes and being the standard for how you identify what an at-risk patient is. Other products we're working on right now is we have a hip and we have another device for spine that we're working on, play with a large strategic that we're also working on in the background. And so for the reason why we're here today, we're essentially looking for ideally some additional strategic investors at the Series A level, and then helping us raise a larger fund to help scale and finish up some of the technologies in summer of next year. So, thank you.
Fantastic. Congratulations. You know, I've started implanting smart devices, smart knees, for the reason of compliance. Can you talk to us through the compliance that patients have with this technology?
Yeah, there's actually the compliance more than anything is the psychosocial aspects of it. And we see it from a couple of different levels. So one is that if a surgeon is involved or engaged with it in the recruitment of the patient, just outside that the surgeon is excited about it, compliance instantly increases much higher. The second is that when they think that they're being watched, or we provide guidance that a feedback for that, or they can see their progress, the compliance also increases quite a bit.
What is your compliance rate?
It depends on what you define as compliance. So it's very specific because there's what we call passive compliance, in which we have a large number of patients, particularly that are just a second language, where they, for whatever motivation, the surgeon will recommend that they wear it and they'll at least put the devices on, but they may not provide the progress test or do their exercises every day. So we actually learn quite a bit of what's happening to them under the hood to say, okay, maybe they're not moving or whatever, to help lead to an intervention. Second level of compliance are patients that are all in, and those are the ones that are doing exercises, doing pain scores and everything every day, and actually commenting to us about how they're proud they're making progress, and also great. But I think overall, it just depends. It's the right, we're trying to solve the problem of how do you get the worst case situation patients something. And in general, it depends ultimately on the clinician, right?
Last question I had was, are you getting to buy this? You know, it's hard. You know, sometimes you can go to a health system, you can go to an individual surgeon office, the OR, the ASC.
Right.
This is kind of a tricky financial model.
Yeah. So what I didn't mention is we're running two very large pilots with the two of the three largest physician-owned practices in the country right now. And that's why we're trying to fit into that value-based care model, because we believe that the savings incurred from working in a bundle is more than the cost of the device.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks. Richard Bull, from Chief Strategy Officer from Kamur, and co-founder of Found.Augmatics, which was acquired by Kamur this year. Well done. But he's here to talk about Xambit AI products and so much more. Actually, I'm not entirely sure what you're going to talk to us about, because it's not about Augmatics today.
We'll
wing it. Yeah, go for it. It's not Augmatics. Tell us more.
So nice to be back here. I have a new title, is it?
Right.
Augmatics, and now I'm the Chief Strategy Officer of Kamur. We'll talk about this in a bit. But our two companies have merged to become one. In fact, we're now the most comprehensive AI platform with Xambit at its core. And I'm really excited to get your feedback and tell you about what we're up to. But together we serve UCSF and five of America's biggest health systems. And we're especially focused on the world of orthopedics. Let's go on here. So when I founded Augmatics, the real pain point that we were trying to address is very similar to the pain point that inspired the founding of Kamur. We noticed that then and now, clinicians left and right are spending a third of their day or more feeding the beast, drowning in the EHR, and not doing what they went to school to do. And we here at Kamur are on a mission effectively to liberate them, snap our fingers and say, snap out of it, focus on what matters most, the patient in front of you, so you can be more effective, more efficient, safer. And we do this with the power of AI. Not all of you may know what Kamur does, and we actually offer a variety of really powerful technology solutions that go up and down the patient, the clinician journey to add these efficiencies left and right. The big one we want to talk about today is ambient documentation, or AI Scribe. I think that's especially powerful in the world of orthopedics, and probably several of you are already experimenting or scaling ambient documentation in orthopedics. But I'll have you know that we here at Kamur are also one of the fastest growing AI RCM companies. We have an extensive suite of products around Internet of Things, sensors, asset tracking, safety and duress badges. We also have a powerful patient engagement tool we call Engage. And of course, we have autonomous coding, AI-based coding. These things may sound disparate, but they actually go together. While many of our competitors are focused on now, you know, creating this point solution, let's give you ambient note-taking, we're actually trying to platformize the ambient workflow and sort of make ambient fall into all of these various workflows you see up here. So, you know, now that we're making the note, how do we ensure that team friendly and really filling in all of the downstream processes that need to occur? How do we make sure that the autonomous coding is appearing in workflow as you're seeing your notes pop up? So we think we're uniquely positioned to platformize ambient as a key differentiator versus what you may be seeing from other ambient players in the space. We have quite the footprint in American healthcare. Super proud to have UCSF as a customer and a partner. And we also have, as I mentioned, 5 of America's 10 biggest health systems loving and growing with our ambient solutions, as well as some of our other solutions that I just mentioned. If you take a look at our ambient footprint, it's our 2nd biggest specialty where we're seeing growth is orthopedics. So I think that tells you something very interesting. And I like to say that if you think about Camir to serve your needs, we can really cover the entire patient journey with our suite, from intake to encounter to billing and beyond. So as I was mentioning, Augmedics and Camir are now one. With the backing of General Catalyst, we are on a mission to become the most innovative and platformized ambient solution that you can find. Our ambient solution different than maybe what you've experienced versus other alternatives on the market. For one, I'm really excited about this, and this is one of the reasons why we've come together with Camir. We offer, bar none, more EHR integrations than anyone else. Show me an EHR, and there's never been an EHR we couldn't integrate with. Some others are very laser focused on just one EHR. We're very different. We can thrive in multi-EHR environments, as well as some very niche EHRs. Another reason why people tend to choose our ambient solutions is we offer more service lines than anyone else. So we have our pure AI solution we call Augmedics Go. That is our most popular and fastest growing, most scalable solution. But there are, in every health system I've met, some clinicians that want human in the loop variants of ambient as well. So we offer Augmedics Live, where you have a synchronous connection to human in the loop working with the technology. We also offer Augmedics Assist, which is a bit of a hybrid between Go and Live. We let the technology do most of the heavy lifting, but we still have a human come in for review asynchronously. We, unlike our competitors, can allow a health system or provider group to mix and match and choose which product goes with which clinician and allow for that fungibility. You know, you can even change your mind from visit to visit or even from day to day. And one of the cool things about this, you can almost treat our service like a personal assistant of sorts, and you can trigger off all sorts of orders and other downstream capabilities that EHRs may not have full APIs to do today. This is very powerful. Another key differentiator, we offer what we call ambient care cues or nudges. So while you may think of ambient documentation as conversation takes place in the room, note ends up in the EMR. We actually think about ambient as sort of a bi-directional experience where not only were you doing your notes, but in reverse, we're piping back to your UI helpful nudges to help you remember to do things you may be forgetting. And we kind of work with the provider groups to customize what sort of nudges you're looking for, what's high priority, low priority, what can help you meet your clinical or operational goals. Very different than what you might see elsewhere. I already mentioned some of our platform integrations. It's very cool that we can trigger sort of patient engagement workflows just based off of what was said in the room. I think that's the future of ambient. You know, note taking is increasingly just table stakes, but the future is kind of powering these other downstream capabilities. And lastly, we are obsessed with structured data. We have all kinds of structured data guardrails in the way that we provision best in class quality notes. And we're really excited to partner with you all to do things with that structured data. So that structured data can not only search an RWD projects, it can help power integrations with other software that you may be working on, and is a key differentiator for us, something I'm personally very, very excited about. So yeah, I kind of wanted to wrap up and just go right to questions, because I know we're really quick on time here, but some of you must have some questions.
I guess my first question is, you know, it's a relatively crowded space right now. How do you really form a moat around this technology? You mentioned a platform, maybe some, you know, better integrations with EMR, but, you know, thinking next 3-5 years, how do you stay differentiated in this market?
Yeah, so 5 years ago, there was only one ambient documentation player. That was me. And now there is 50. That's kind of crazy how that happened, right? I think there should really be somewhere between 3 and 4. And that's one of the key reasons why Augmedics and Camir came together. We decided, rather than just kind of be ambient documentation player number 47, let's come together and do something big and bold and really differentiate ourselves and put ourselves in top 3. So becoming a platform play is key to how we stay different. I mean, the future of ambient documentation is for ambient documentation to disappear into all of these things. And that's critical. Another way we differentiate is we just serve more specialties and settings versus anyone else. So the space, the OR space, those are very hard places to be. So if you as a health system want a solution that you can trust and rely on all of your ambulatory environments, your OR environments, your ED environments. We're your people for that. Others are kind of more focused on the thin and wide commodity areas. Oh, great. You can do those visits. Wonderful. But if you want those custom complex areas, we're far and away ahead of others.
And EMRs like Cerner, Epic, how come they haven't really jumped into this market yet? Are they scared by you? Or are you scared by them? Give me an idea of that sense.
Every EMR is a unique beast. We have a great relationship with both of those EMRs. We have over a dozen Epic Health systems loving and growing with us. Epic has committed for the near and the midterm to not build an ambient solution themselves, but create a village of sorts, allowing the various providers of ambient solutions to thrive and grow in their world. We are listed. We're one of them. We have access to the Frontier APIs to do precisely that. Cerner's a little bit different. So Cerner's actually developed their own sort of first-party in-house ambient solution called CDA. It's early days for them. It's very limited in where it works. For example, it can't work in the ED or OR environments like I just described. If you want human-in-the-loop levels of support, if you want nudges and bidirectional, sorry, that's not in Oracle CDA. But if you want a more advanced, capable ambient solution, we work well with Cerner, and we have many Cerner health systems. Like in the area, we have Dignity and Adventist and others. And by the way, if you go on the Cerner Oracle website, we are listed as a partner. I think we're the only listed partner that Cerner lists in their ambient marketplace.
Perfect. Thank you. You come such a long way from the days when I wore your Google glasses. It's been remarkable.
Yeah, it's true. We were the original Google Glass company. I'm the original glass hole. It's really never been what you're wearing or what's in the front end, but sort of what happens in the back end.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. And next, we have Mr. Ryan, who's joining us as President and CEO of Pristine Surgical. Ryan is an enterprise leader, investor, and advisor to companies in the medtech, semiconductor, clean tech, and software industries who've been busy. Please tell us about Pristine Surgical.
I can't let Glasshole go without chuckling. good comment. Hey, thanks for having us here today. One of the key questions that was asked earlier is how robotics gets a seat at the table. And that's what I want to talk about here today, whether it be robotics or actually more writ large, digital health gets a seat at the table. And the question I'd say is, well, where is that table located? And I think we probably in this room all know that increasingly that table is going to be at ambulatory surgery centers, right? Something last is to be at ambulatory surgery centers. In the space that we're working in, 90% of arthroscopies are done at ambulatory surgery centers. So I think we know ASCs, in spite of our friends at UCSF, ASCs stand to be one of the heroes in healthcare, right? They do an increasing amount of procedures, and they also do it at decreasing costs, contrary to some of the trends that we've talked about certainly earlier today. But the equipment that they have to work with has got certainly challenges with them. So we talk endoscopy sort of as the global term of it. We're particularly focused to start with in arthroscopy. This is what an arthroscopy tower looks like. It looks like the old stereo systems that we used to lug up and down, you know, the dorm floors, right? It's got a whole asteroid belt of equipment that has to be in the right place at the right time in order to perform the procedure properly. And believe it or not, there are 35 processing steps in an instruction for use that you have to go hire or retain staff to be able to perform after every procedure. And this is actually what an arthroscopy tower looks like in the OR. Believe it or not, it's not dot matrix, but there is a laser printer on 95% of these towers at the bottom of the stack. Stryker will be happy to sell you a $5 glossy sheet of paper for you to print off the images from your procedure. You get a space-age pen you pull out called a Bic pen, space-age instrument called a Bic pen. You write on it. You give one to the keeper that walks down the hall. That's the state of the art today. So contrary to all of the really awesome stuff that we're talking about in where the digital world is going, unfortunately, connectivity is not a priority, is my thesis to you, at ambulatory surgery centers today in the field. This is what their challenges are. So you can see this is straight off the Ambulatory Surgery Center Association website. They talk about their surveys. This is what they're worried with. They're worried about physical space limitations. They're worried about issues with hiring and retaining staff and training staff. They're worried about cash flow, and they're worried about issues, also sterilization of equipment. So at Pristine, what our mission is to simplify and to address those key points, right? So what we want to do is to simplify endoscopy, and we're doing that with next-generation single-use endoscopes. So we start with the single-use side of things. We have a razor blade platform. Let's think about it, scopes by subscription. So we're selling kits, and then we're plugging them into the box that you see here. And what that does, and I'm sort of cutting through some of the details here in the interest of time, what that really does is takes hardware to simplify that very complex environment and address those key issues that you hear from the ambulatory surgery centers out in the field. So this you can then think about and then transition. So what you can think about also as a connected OR hub. So while we have razor blades in the field that make life simpler and easier for the technicians and for the physicians and the facilities, it plugs into a razor that then is connected into the cloud. And that's a key part of enabling our business model to start with. So connectivity further simplifies operations, right? So we eliminate a lot of the inventory control. We eliminate a lot of the challenges that I talked about before. What this also enables is that when you get that hub connected into the cloud, now we can connect then to the provider, we can connect then to the patient, and we can connect, as we've talked about here, with the interesting ways into the EMR that other folks are doing really well and in a very world-class kind of way. And when I think about then the convergence of faster, better, cheaper hardware and the things we're talking about in this environment, at this great conference, it's really our opportunity, we think, to provide a platform of the connected OR. So propagate these devices out into the field, connect them to the cloud, and now we've built a bridge. Now we've built a bridge so the things that are being talked about today can be AI propagation into the ambulatory surgery center OR and also data aggregation out. So if we take a little step back and sort of reference some of the things that we all are very familiar with, this is very basic for this to about, and I took notes on this when folks talked about voice as being one of the key, you know, enablers, right? So we made a deal with Amazon to put microphones in our living rooms and in our kitchens in order to have the ease of using voice to connect into the cloud, right? So also, if you think about what the iPhone did for us, we saw a thing about the desk, the doctor's desk, and it's a similar sort of metaphor here that the Radio Shack ad that was part of this meme converged 13 different hardware devices into an iPhone. And here what you saw as well is simplification of hardware that then enabled digital connectivity as well. So my thesis here for you all is that in the same way that Alexa enables the connected home through simplification, and in the same way that the iPhone enables this, the connectivity through the simplification of hardware, that's what we're doing at Pristine to simplify endoscopy. And the benefit of that, to come full circle then for what we're talking about at DocSF, is that ultimately you provide that bridge. This happens to be nice on theme as well. Give me some credit for the good part. Yeah, all right. And ultimately what we'll do is connect as well. So that's our piece of the puzzle. It's really a pleasure to be here with all of you and talking about how we might be able to enable some of those neat technologies to get into the ambulatory surgery center. So thank you.
Congratulations. This is near and dear to my heart. I'm in ASCs all the time. You know, it's a little bit different than a razor blade in the model. You've got obviously an extra cost more than a razor blade associated with that. Have you contemplated doing, you know, kind of a combined mixed model? It seems to me like you're really selling the data at the end of this and you're saying, well, this thing's disposable. Have you thought about doing both where it's disposable and you kind of re-sterilize it, send it back? Have you thought about some of these renewable type options to add to your model?
So it's a common initial perception, but let me be bold and say misconception that actually we add cost. So believe it or not, when you do the math, and we've got a comprehensive cost savings calculator that we put together, we'll actually save our facilities between 5 to 40%, depending upon how you slice and dice. So as we all are evangelists, right, of the magic that you can do with microelectronics, we're basically taking that same capability. We saw the power of Moore's Law. We're taking the power of Moore's Law and microchips, including image sensors and compute processing, and we're providing that power to give equivalent, if not better, image. And then amazingly, at a lower cost, so much lower that you can actually throw away those chips after every procedure. And it's cheaper than what you would do to actually service and sterilize the devices. That's the gap and the technology arbitrage opportunity that we have really taken advantage of Moore's Law in our devices. So we will save money, first and foremost. Reusability, we're looking at some different downstream and be thinking about different ways of sustainability and green recycling. And then data aggregation, certainly. That's one of the things downrange. We'll get foot in the door first, and then we'll look at ways to bring data aggregation to bear.
My last quick question is, how are you distributing it, competing against the giants out there?
Yeah, it's a great question as well. So one, distributing, we've got five direct sales reps today, and then we'll be using independent reps to go to market in order to get to scale. We also see this as a complementary device. This is not either or. So our device is designed to be interoperable with all of the existing systems. So we simply take away two components on the tower. Typically, it's 65% or so of the value of the tower. It's the light source and the camera head. We can take those out and you put our box in, or you can put them side by side. And we've got pictures of all of the major, vendors out there where we've got interoperability with them.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Great.
Thanks.
Superb question. Thank you, Charlie Cook.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Digital Orthopedist Podcast, and hope you'll make a note to join us for the next Digital Orthopedist Conference San Francisco in October. Take care. Bye.